is Marcia Savage with SearchCloudSecurity.com. I recently met with Mike Hamilton, Chief Information Security Officer with the City of Seattle, to talk about the city's SaaS toolkit, which includes a SaaS SLA template and best practices document. In this interview, you'll hear him talk about how the city ensures security in the SaaS contract process and how security should be turned into a market driver and competitive differentiator.
I was hoping you could start by just talking about the city's SaaS toolkit, you know, how it came about and your role in it.
Yeah, there's a number of people that have been working on this, and my role was really to work on the security parts of this by virtue of the fact that once we contract a provider of a cloud service or hosted application or SaaS or whatever you want to call it, once the ink is dry, our leverage is terminated. There's no way we can set another requirement, nothing like that. So it was incumbent on us to ensure that we did a lot of due diligence in the first place so that, you know, once we contract these guys, we don't have to worry about something coming up and biting us. So there was a number of people that worked on more of the total cost of ownership. When does it make sense to buy a service in the cloud or have an application hosted versus building it, operating it in-house? The parts that I worked on were the contract language and the RFP language. And I will say that even though the bar has been set fairly high, that is to say that it is a minimum qualification of doing business with the city. If you're going to sell us your cloud application, your hosted app, it is a minimum qualification of being able to propose to the opportunity that you can provide us with a third-party test report that attests to the fact that your application is free of known security defect against a standard we recognize. In this case, we use the OWASP standard.
How long ago were these documents developed? About last year or?
Yeah, they're about a year old at this point. Mm-hmm. Some of the contract language we had worked on early on, and then this, we have some good facilitators that work here. There's a group of people that work on technology planning and oversight. And the facilitators will sit with us, outline something, you know, provide us with Gartner research, Forrester research, and then draw out, you know, how are we going to do this, and then get that all embodied in our operating documents. And that's kind of the way it worked this time. So it was about a year ago that they pulled this together after I had previously done some work with contract and RFP language.
Okay. Now, I'm wondering, you know, until you got involved, was there an issue with security being sort of overlooked in the SLAs and the contract process with the SaaS providers? Or
okay, so that is a very good question. And so let me tell you how this came about. In my role here, I work on policy, standards, governance. That's a lot of what I do. It's also very operational. I have to respond to incidents and look at logs and do whatever we got to do. So it became clear that as we made this transition into buying more in the cloud versus building more ourselves, which we had typically done, that my standard, my policy of ensuring that nothing faced an untrusted network until it has been tested and, again, demonstrated to be free of known security defect, that none of our vendors had ever even heard of this concept. And I'm not going to throw anybody under the bus, but I can tell you some big vendors have come in here selling us big ticket things. And when I said, okay, how's this been tested for security? Can you give me a test report or even the executive summary of a report that says that this is, you know, free of defect? They looked at me like I was from Mars. Wow. And generally they come up with the same three responses. A, nobody ever asked that before. B, our application's never been hacked. Or C, we have a whole bunch of federal agency customers and they're all happy with this. So in my efforts to address what was our internal policy, we needed a way to address what we're buying out there the same way that we're building it. And so the easy way to do that is to require the vendors to, if they want to play, if they want our business, then they're going to have to demonstrate that their application is secure. And just let me rail on this a little while longer. This is the way, so the federal government is flailing right now, trying to figure out how do we, you know, help the private sector secure themselves, okay, for set aside for a moment that that's the blind leading the blind. But they're coming up with, well, here's the standard you ought to be. It's a voluntary standard, and, you know, it may turn into a regulatory. No, no. You turn security into a market force. We are capitalists. We love to make money. If it was a standard of practice that nobody out there would buy a hosted application or a SaaS application or whatever, unless there was this attestation by a third party that this, well, whatever we're buying is free of known security defect, that it becomes a market force. It becomes a competitive differentiator for those companies. They want to do it. Buy my stuff. I'm the one who's been tested for security and can prove it. I don't know what those guys got going on. That helps smooth the decision-making process. And frankly, security's become such a big deal that I think, you know, more than round-off error in terms of how we make the decision on what to buy, this is now becoming quite significant. So it's really this attempt to turn this into a market force. And in the absence of, you know, a good housekeeping seal of approval or underwriter lab, you know, seal or whatever, the only thing we can do is say, you got to give me a third-party test report. You got to prove to me this has been tested.
And I'm wondering, are you finding that the vendors have more of that kind of security proof to provide, or are they still lacking in security?
They, at the 90% level, you know, again, they've never even heard anyone talk to them the way I talk to them. So we give them an alternative, because it can be, you know, if you're not the size of a, well, I'm not going to mention any companies, but if you're not a big company, you know, it might cost you $20,000 to have this testing done to, you know, your little application. And if you're a small business, that might not be feasible for you. So here at the city, we have commercial tools that we use for penetration testing our own web applications before they're deployed to face the internet. And we say, okay, if you can't or won't have it done by a third party, we will do that ourselves. But instead of providing us with a single paragraph that says it's been tested by a third party, blah, 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 we now have details to every wart on your application, and we're going to get you to fix them. So this is, you know, every policy has an exception process, and this is how the exception process works for this particular policy. So we don't allow anything to come into the house if it hasn't been tested for security. In the contract language, you will see there are further stipulations that if there are functional, structural, architectural changes, the application's got to be retested. You know, and as far as I'm concerned, this knocks down a whole bunch of the security problem just by turning it into this, you know, kind of market force.
Do you get any kind of pushback from vendors when you say that, you know, we're going to test your security if you don't really provide the certifications or the attestations?
Well, that's not the way we say it. We say, you can't do business with us. Unless we go through this process, it's better for you to have a third party do it, and you just give us a couple of sentences that say this has been done and it looks good, or we'll do it for you and we will, you know, have knowledge of everything that's going on.
I mean, in terms of making security a market force, I mean, are you seeing that more organizations are kind of taking that attitude? I mean, do you think see this happening?
I have to say no. Mm-hmm. I mean, the vendors do not get this. There are some extremely high-profile vendors of products that you are very familiar with that do not address this. And we, you know, they're not all big. A lot of these are the little guys, okay? So there was, for example, Here's an example of how some of this falls through the cracks. There are a bunch of free services out there, and these free services can be used for a lot of things. One of them is file hosting. And so right now, our organization, like many others, are struggling with this issue around consumer technology, right? I want to use my iPad for work. Well, in order to actually get that to work, in the absence of all of the management software that is coming but is not mature yet, they've taken it upon themselves to just start trading files, maybe with myself, maybe with, you know, other people I need to trade files with, but using these file hosting services. And then we find out that the file hosting services are so badly written that you can compromise any account using any password. Okay, that's just pathetic. Mm-hmm. This is the kind of thing that happens if you don't stand on the neck of your vendors and get them to assure you that they're not selling you crap. You know, we just use the OWASP standard, you know. Don't sell me something that is vulnerable to SQL injection and cross-site scripting and all of these things, right? The common things that are out there happening. It's really a question of just raising the bar high enough so that the unsophisticated, amateurish, non-serious attacker is not a threat at all. You know, the nation-state level of attacker or some, you know, terrorist hybrid with organized crime or something like that, going to be very, very difficult to keep out because they'll use blended social engineering methods and blah, blah, blah. But to raise the bar so that you're not low-hanging fruit, this is easy stuff to do. And, you know, the federal government will probably come out with their own standard that they have to have all their vendors meet. But this is doable today.
Well, what would you say are some of the key security provisions that, say, a SaaS contract needs to have?
Well, let's see. I haven't read through that stuff in a while, but there were a lot of questions on the disposition of data. Mm-hmm. You know, being able to identify exactly where it resides, what country it resides in. You know, we want clauses that let us out if a SaaS provider is acquired by, say, another company in a country that's hostile to the U.S. You know, the ability to conduct e-discovery or public disclosure is a big deal for us. Those are some of the issues around it. You know, mainly for me, it's this whole issue about the security of the application and how that can be demonstrated, since I don't have a direct touch point to the developers of the application like I do in our own organization. We just have to rely on attestation, but that becomes legally binding per the language in the contract. And, you know, so around security, that's really the main thing. And you can, you know, I mean, we could drill down into the, you know, authentication controls and, you know, how are you authorized to assets, et cetera, within an application. That's more of the conversation that we have when providing oversight to a deployment project, right? How is this going to be configured for our use, which is not exactly the same as the whole issue around what we do during procurement to make sure that we're not being sold something that's just, you know, developed in, you know, 1977 version Fortran and full of bugs.
So how much SaaS has the city deployed? How much of it, of your internet?
Oh, quite a bit.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know. There's probably, I'd say, somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 applications that we're using in a SaaS capacity that allowed us to avoid writing our own.
Okay.
Some of it is probably very familiar to CRM. We're using a little bit of SaaS CRM, even though we just bought a giant product and we're going to implement it in-house. Okay, there's about 20 of them. And so I'll give you, here's a little example. It's generally not the big name stuff when we're talking about SaaS applications. It's, you know, a bank in Oregon who is managing loans to consumers for energy efficiency upgrades and are have a combined data with the city's energy utility so that the bills can be, or the payments against the loans can be billed on the utility bills. Mm-hmm. So there's a SaaS application out there for signing up utility customers to do this, and then there's this data integration between a bank and the utility on the back end. that's typically how these things come about. It's a when we need another party involved to be able to handle something that we don't natively do as part of our core skill set, we end up with one of these integrated applications that, you know, I mean, to the consumer, they don't know it's Seattle City Light, but there's all this stuff going on in the background, and it's actually a hosted application at a bank.
Were there any other points that we didn't cover that you kind of want to talk about, or?
No, I really did want to bring up this notion of security as a competitive differentiator, and how if we will all embrace this idea, we're going to get to a better place. And, you know, the federal government is not showing up to help you out by coming up with, hey, all applications in the cloud have to meet these requirements. That's not happening. This is you're going to have to handle your own problem here, and the right way to do it is to stand on the neck of your vendors and say, we don't buy it. If it's not secure, that's the end of that discussion. And, you know, if we all do this, we're going to be better.
This concludes our podcast. Thanks for listening. For more information on these topics, please visit searchcloudsecurity.com.